Hi, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I am Mike Spofford. He is my partner in crime, Wes Hodkowitz. We're coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And Wes, a few days away now from the regular season finale, week 18. It will be Packers at Lions at Ford Field in Detroit. But before we talk about that game in particular, I want to discuss another subject, and that is that we've spent a lot of time on this show talking about the history that Aaron Rodgers and Davante Adams have made or are on the verge of making, all of these types of things. But we have neglected, and that's mostly my fault, to talk about a significant piece of history on the coaching side of things. And that is that Matt LaFleur last weekend got his 39th regular season victory as the head coach of the Packers in his first three seasons, which is now the most wins ever by an NFL head coach in his first three seasons. And there's no overstating how impressive that is.
It's one of the most impressive things I've ever seen in the coaching realm. And this is no disrespect to George Seifert whatsoever, but when that passing of the torch happened in San Francisco, it happened in a way that really barely ever happens in the National Football League. He was handed a Corvette and he drove the car like a Corvette.
Yeah.
The Green Bay Packers were at a crossroads. 2018 was the worst year that this organization has had on so many different levels, really, in my lifetime, the last 28, 29 years. I don't think LaFleur gets enough credit for how quickly he changed. It's not like the culture needed an entire overhaul. It's not like the roster needed an entire overhaul. But they had to get back to being the Green Bay Packers again. And LaFleur did that. They come out the gates 13-3. I thought then and there he should have been the coach of the year. It was the biggest single-season turnaround in franchise history in terms of wins. I felt like that was the moment where he was the coach of the year. They decided to give it to John Harbaugh. Last year, pretty dominant on all sides, all phases. He again doesn't get the award. When you're sitting and you've now played 48 games in the regular season, you've won 39 of them.
Yeah.
I think the proof is in the pudding there. And the fact of the matter is LaFleur can credit his assistants. He can credit the football team. He can do everything to take the shine away from himself.
Which he tries to do quite regularly.
Every time we ask him about it.
Right.
And it's fine. Humility is a good thing. But
yeah.
As I wrote in Insider Inbox a couple weeks back, if people don't start paying attention to this, they're going to miss one of the really, truly special coaching jobs we've seen. This isn't some Johnny-come-lately. Matt LaFleur is here to stay, and people better get used to it. I mean, you got to start recognizing that achievement because it's pretty incredible this run he's been on.
Yeah, absolutely. As you mentioned, the 39 wins in the first three seasons, one more than George Seifert, who won 38 games in the regular season. His first 3 years with San Francisco, Seifert had a Super Bowl championship in there as well. Folks have been asking, about the larger historical context. What about any three-year run in the NFL? The record is 40 games, 40 victories, and that's Mike Ditka, of the Chicago Bears, 1985 through 1987. The Bears went 15-1, 14-2, and then 11-4. In a year that only had 15 games as opposed to 16 because of the strike, and there were three replacement games in there. The Bears went 2-1 in their three replacement games. It all added up to 40 wins in 47 games for Mike Ditka. So Matt LaFleur, with the extra game this year, with the 17th game, has a chance to match Mike Ditka's 40 wins in three seasons. Regarding the Coach of the Year, I am absolutely with you, and we probably didn't talk about it enough on this show at the time, but Matt LaFleur was very deserving of Coach of the Year in 2019, his first year. He took over a team that had missed the playoffs back-to-back seasons.
Yep.
And yes, things had, as far as the way things have gone in the last three decades at Lambeau Field and with the Green Bay Packers, 2018 was as close to rock bottom as it gets. Maybe not. It wasn't as bad as 2005, which I think was a 4-12 season.
Sure.
That was probably the rock bottom of the last three decades, but close enough, certainly. And he not only got the Packers right back into the playoffs, but they were the number two seed. They got a first-round bye and all of that his first year. That being said, I think the Coach of the Year discussion this year is very interesting. And here's the context that I'll put it in. For a while, it was looking like, for a while in 2021, it was looking like this would be either Cliff Kingsbury or maybe Bill Belichick with what was going on in Arizona and New England. To use your phrase, the shine has worn off a little bit on those. Not to take away from two teams that are both headed to the postseason and could, you know, have some magic here in January. Who knows, right? But now lately, you certainly have to consider Mike McCarthy a legitimate candidate for Coach of the Year. Zach Taylor with the Cincinnati Bengals and suddenly where they are. Mike Vrabel has the Tennessee Titans in position now after losing Derrick Henry, who was probably the single most important player on his team. The Titans now are in position to be the number one seed potentially in the AFC. My point is that while we've seen all of these other coaches sort of rise and fall in this potential candidacy for Coach of the Year, Matt LaFleur has sort of been there the whole time. He's been a candidate. He's been a candidate since the day he got this job. And I know it's not a three-year thing. It's supposed to be for an individual season. But he's been right in the mix the whole time and never really fallen out of it. And I think that speaks volumes as to the type of the culture that he has built here.
I basically have two coaches of the year I'd be willing to accept. And one is Mike Vrabel, just based on the standpoint of, I think he used a very compelling argument for how he's kept that team afloat. I even made the comment, I don't typically tweet during football games. I just like to, if I'm watching, I just watch. People like to like do the second screen thing. No, that's not me. But after they won, I believe that was, what was that, 2 weeks ago? They had that big win late. I actually tweeted, I was like, that's a gritty football team.
Yeah.
And the ways that they've found to win this season, I think you got to tip their cap to them. And not only now Derrick Henry, but also A.J. Brown being back. I mean, they're going to be a formidable team here in the postseason. That's a credit to Vrabel. Or it's LaFleur.
Yeah. Because what speaks to what LaFleur has done this year in winning 13 games so far, that the Packers haven't necessarily had to deal with through his first two seasons is all of the injuries. There are injuries that happen every year, but as we talk about, it's which are the guys that get hurt, right?
Yeah.
And we're talking about a five-time All-Pro in David Bakhtiari who hasn't played all season, a pair of second-team All-Pros in Jair Alexander and Za'Darius Smith, and then another Pro Bowl offensive lineman in Elgton Jenkins goes down. You know, a double-digit touchdown guy at tight end and Bobby Tonyan goes down. I mean, the injuries that the Packers have dealt with and that Matt LaFleur and his coaching staff have had to manage and deal with all season long, that speaks to why I think he's a top candidate for Coach of the Year this year for very different reasons than he should have been Coach of the Year 2 years ago.
Absolutely. And 2 years ago, he should have did it because it was this incredible turnaround.
Yeah.
That year, the AP voters decided, you know what? We're going to go with John Harbaugh, which, by the way, the other thing I love, too, people in Insider Inbox bringing up, hey, if you have the MVP, can they not be the Coach of the Year? 2 years ago, that wasn't a big deal for the Baltimore Ravens.
Yeah.
But yet, that's the direction they went.
Yeah, they had Lamar Jackson. He was the cat's meow, right?
A couple things I just want to say here quickly, just to close the point on LaFleur. I loved how there was this argument early on about Sean Payton, all these injuries and things that the Saints have gone through. And certainly they've been hit by injuries and illness more than any other team in the National Football League.
Absolutely.
No question about that. But then everyone wanted to bang the trumpet for him as the Coach of the Year. The Saints fell off. LaFleur's been doing this since week one, basically lost everyone outside of Aaron Rodgers. And he'd even lost him for 1 week.
Yeah,
and they
for
came
one game.
Within 6 points of handing the Kansas City Chiefs their only loss up until last week. So be that as it may, I just think there's so many great awards that the Associated Press has. Offensive Player of the Year, MVP, all these different things. I think they tend to get them right. The batting average hasn't been great on Coach of the Year these last few years. No disrespect to Matt Nagy. No disrespect to Kevin Stefanski. There is a lot to be said for being able to have a turnaround.
Yeah.
But I think they got to kind of figure out what they want to emphasize here because they moved the goalposts. And if you look back over the last 10, 15 years, there's a lot of really random coaches that ended up being the NFL Coach of the Year when I feel like that honor should be a little bit more prestigious.
Yeah, and I think going back a ways, not to get not to go too far back into the history, but I always felt it was extremely unfortunate that when Mike McCarthy put together that 13-3 season in Green Bay in 2007, his second year at the helm, when he had gone 8-8 his first year, Brett Favre became an MVP candidate again in 2007. Well, it just so happened that the New England Patriots ran the table and were 16-0, and there was sort of like this obligation to give the Coach of the Year to Bill Belichick. Because of what the Patriots had accomplished there, and Mike McCarthy got overlooked for what I thought was a tremendous coaching job. So, yeah, these awards, they aren't perfect. Stuff happens, but I hope LaFleur gets due consideration this year. Even though I do believe there are other worthy candidates. Yep. You know, the cupboard is not bare in terms of the potential candidates here. But. Over the course of the entire season, from week one until now, I think Matt LaFleur has been there. He's been in this mix. He's been in the discussion the whole time, and he's never let anybody down. And the fact that once again, for a third straight season, he has not lost back-to-back games as a head coach, to me, that is his most impressive accomplishment. If I look at the 3 years in total right now.
Yeah, and to be able to manage everything that's happened over the last 12 months in Green Bay. Salary cap issues, the things in the offseason program, I think you got to give him a lot of credit. And then I'll also, you know, mention this too. I mean, the Packers want to win a Super Bowl. That's all they're really focused on, and that is totally appropriate. But what Aaron Rodgers said after they clinched the NFC North, when he gave that speech to the huddle afterwards about enjoying these moments, enjoying these victories, understanding how difficult it is to win in this league, it's not that have your cake and eat it too scenario to appreciate when you have individual accomplishment. And I think that's something that is important to remember with LaFleur, is that it's cool. It's neat that there's a Coach of the Year. I understand it's a very subjective thing.
Yeah.
But it's cool. It's cool to be Coach of the Year. It's okay. and I think if it would work that way, it would be amazing for LaFleur. The biggest point, though, I thought you raised there that is very valid is just to get due consideration. There hasn't been enough votes cast for Matt LaFleur the last 2 years. It would at least be nice to see him get a better run at it this year.
Yeah, I would agree. I would absolutely agree. Sirius XM NFL Radio delivers hard-hitting analysis and up-to-the-minute NFL news that true football fanatics need 24/7, 365. And at Cousin Subs, we have something for everyone, like our Wisconsin cheese curds, mac and cheese, golden fries, and creamy shakes, all paired with your favorite sub or sub in a bowl. Cousin Subs. We believe in better. All right, Wes, the Packers are headed to Detroit for the regular season finale. The plan is to start the game with the starters.
Yep.
We don't know. Matt LaFleur says they have developed a plan for how to work through this. We don't know how long the starters are going to play. Maybe it's going to be one quarter, two quarter, three quarters. I don't know. But the Packers are essentially, Matt LaFleur has decided, you know, yes, there's a risk of injury anytime you put guys out there, but he's willing to accept the risk of injury over what he feels is the larger risk of giving the guys this week off and then the following week with not having a game over wild card weekend. As we talked about on our last show, then suddenly it's 3 weeks between games. So the Packers are going to Detroit. They are preparing this week with their frontline players ready to start the game, and then we'll see how it unfolds from there.
I honestly don't think, and I even wrote about it for our website, I don't really think this is as big of a deal as what it's sort of become. I think it honestly is this is a week in which there isn't a lot to write about because the game really, in a lot of ways, doesn't matter. But the one thing, there's a couple things that hit me on Wednesday about it. One, it was Davante Adams discussing it because he was asked in a very intelligent and terrific way by Jason Wilde about the difference between this and then you guys don't want to play in preseason. What's the difference? And Davante, it's so obvious when you think about it, but it doesn't hit you right away. As he mentioned, in the preseason, which he said is pointless, which I don't disagree with him.
For players of his stature.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
What good is going to come out of Mike Spofford going over to a local, you know, middle school and writing something for their school paper, right? I mean, it's just it's a different level. But the thing is that he mentions in training camp, you're going pretty hard in those practices. You have padded practice. You have padded practice day after day. There is an element of almost you need some rest with those to kind of de-escalate a little bit.
Yeah, and for fans who don't know, training camp practices are significantly longer, greater duration than regular season practices. It is much more of a daily grind on the field in training camp than it is during the regular
season. It's more like a play. It's not just a dress rehearsal. I mean, they are really going after it.
Yeah.
And right now, it isn't like that. They get their plays in, they have their script in, but everything's been installed. They've run a lot of these schemes. It's just trying to figure out what are we going to install for this game.
Yeah, yeah. It's about the game. It's about the game plan and just refamiliarizing everybody with certain concepts in the playbook that they're choosing for this particular contest.
So you're not going all that hard in those games. So in those practices. So that's where this 3 weeks comes in that we keep talking about. If they wouldn't play on Sunday. And I wrote this in inbox too. Okay, the game doesn't matter. We know all that. So that's where you just avoid the risk. Aaron Rodgers is under pressure. Throw the ball away. You know, I mean,
yeah.
Take an intentional grounding call. These type of things. I think it's a very physical game. It's an important game. But at the same time, I don't think it is the danger that everybody wants to present this as. Preseason, there's no point in it because you could get a non-contact injury, as we saw with Jordy Nelson. These guys don't need these reps. They're installing stuff in practice. They don't want to show the stuff they've installed against the opposition and put that on film. This is a different animal. And for the Packers to actually go out there on Sunday, do they need to play? Probably not. But to be able to keep that momentum going and keep building and keep the wheel turning, as Devontae Adams said, I think there's a lot of value in that.
Well, we will see. We will certainly see how things unfold. I will say this with regard to however long Aaron Rodgers, Devontae Adams, and the frontline guys play, I don't think there's anything one way or another that Aaron Rodgers can do or not do that will impact the MVP voting. I'm not going to get into all of the Hal Barkish stuff. It is not worth our time to discuss that. What I do want to say is that I think it's pretty clear cut on the field that Aaron Rodgers is the MVP in the NFL. You said it in inbox. I've said it as well before. To me, I felt like a few weeks ago, it felt like it was Aaron Rodgers, Jonathan Taylor, and Tom Brady. And with a few games to go in the regular season, okay, like how is this going to shake out? Now, you know, Taylor had the nationally televised game, you know, in prime time, had like a 40-plus yard run, but then was held to like 60-some yards on his other 25, 26 carries. He didn't have that big monster game down the stretch, and the Colts are sitting there at 9-7. Yes, they'll probably make the playoffs. They beat the Jaguars. They'll get in. But 10-7, I think it's hard to vote for an MVP on a team that loses seven games.
Yeah.
You look at Tom Brady. He's got the shinier statistics, certainly in terms of the yards and the touchdowns, than Aaron Rodgers has. But with the Buccaneers in the fight for the playoff bye and the number one seed, Tom Brady got shut out by the New Orleans Saints in a game that he only needed to put up 10 points to win because his defense held New Orleans to 9. He got shut out. And yes, Aaron Rodgers had a terrible game against the Saints back in week one, but games in December matter more.
Yeah.
And to me, that sequence of events with the fact that Rodgers has continued this run where every week he's throwing either two or three touchdown passes with no interceptions, and the Packers are finishing now on with a winning streak here and have clinched the number one seed with a week to go, I think the separation has occurred between Aaron Rodgers, Jonathan Taylor, and Tom Brady, that this award should be Rodgers. Since week one, the guy has thrown 35 touchdown passes and two interceptions. And he's lost one game because the other Packers' loss was when he didn't play. He's lost one game on a walk-off field goal in US Bank Stadium. Yeah, and he threw a 75-yard touchdown to give his team a chance to win that game late. So to me, it's just I don't know. I honestly don't know how, in good conscience, any voter, whether you're taking in the off the field garbage or not, I don't know how any voter in good conscience can really say that Aaron Rodgers is not the MVP in 2021. To me. There are more valid candidates for the coach of the year discussion we just had than the MVP one. This is a slam dunk for Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, I think so, and I agree with you. I think he should go back-to-back. I think it should be number four for him. The other thing I want, too, is I want that focus to be on what happens on the football field.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
This is the one thing that's funny, right? My dad recently retired. Congratulations, Pahad. Worked for 40 years, close to it. A nearby paper mill here.
Celebrate, my man.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know what his day-to-day was like. I don't know what happened there. I knew what he was like when he came home. I knew what he was like when he was my dad, but I had no idea what was going on at his place of business, as he has no idea really ultimately what happens at mine now these days. The thing I don't understand about the Rodgers fiasco is all this is there's so many people on the outside, and it's been like this for, you know, last 5 years, 6 years, it seems like, where everybody wants to draw conclusions and have these grandiose statements about things, but they're not the ones actually in the locker room. And when the argument gets made about the bad teammate, about these off-the-field distractions, it didn't show up in the win and loss column this season.
Nope, it didn't.
And when time
had nothing
came
to do with it.
And when time came to play football in July, Aaron Rodgers was there. I'm not privy to any of those conversations. I don't know what those things have been like with Brian Gutekunst, but all I can go off of is what I've seen. And what I've seen is a 13-3 team, a quarterback with the best passer rating in the NFL this season. You know, for so many years, people wanted to dog him for the QBR. He leads that darn stat, too. I couldn't tell you one thing about it, but I know he's leading that category. Aaron Rodgers is the most valuable player to the league's winningest team. And as I wrote in inbox, I'm like, if you neglect to recognize that, you're just denying reality.
Yeah.
And to overthink it and draw these other conclusions, if Aaron Rodgers had these stats and the Packers were 5-11 right now, I don't think you and I would be sitting up here talking about why he's the MVP.
Nope.
We're not doing that for Jonathan Taylor right now, and heck, they got 9 wins on the season. So I just think, you know, I don't know. It's going to be weird. I think that when this thing's all said and done, however many years or whenever that ends, there's going to be a lot of dissecting about what exactly all this was about, because it isn't just one thing to me. It's a lot of things. And ultimately, I think the guys in that locker room, the guys that he connects with, they're the ones that speak the loudest. And for the Green Bay Packers, it's led to a lot of winning, and it has them once again in the driver's seat in the NFC.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, with regard to the NFC, before we go, I just want to touch on where things are with regard to the playoff picture. We all know the Packers have the number one seed. They have it clinched. There is one spot still available, so I'm going to put you on the spot here, Wes. The 49ers are playing the Rams. If the 49ers win, they get the last playoff spot. If the Rams win that game, the New Orleans Saints can get the last playoff spot with a victory over the Atlanta Falcons. So what do you think? Who's going to get that final wild card spot in the NFC?
I think the New Orleans Saints are. And the main reason I say that is I think the Rams, kind of like Green Bay has been on, the Rams have been on a big run here too to end the regular season. And I just feel like San Francisco has been way too up and down. And while you give San Francisco a lot of credit for how they handed it to the Rams, I think this game will be different in LA. I just feel like the Rams, in addition to being the more talented team, are the more consistent team. To be honest with you, I would actually like to see the 49ers in the playoffs more than the Saints from a pure entertainment standpoint. I think they're a bigger question mark. I have a hard time seeing the Saints getting on much of a run.
Yeah, the 49ers are a more balanced team.
Definitely.
For sure.
But the schedule is what it is.
Yeah.
And for the 49ers, this is a difficult opponent. I just don't see LA laying another egg against San Fran. Could happen. But if you put me on the spot for who I'm picking, I'd probably pick L.A. and pick New Orleans to get in.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think San Francisco has had a pretty strong push here towards the end. And the Rams, while, you know, extremely talented, but dealing with you know, a massive COVID list and all this, and then their games getting rescheduled and moved around, and then, you know, playing on a super short week and all this kind of stuff. And Matthew Stafford's been turning the ball over,
yes,
like crazy. And so that's where I just wonder if now the game is in LA, as you said, it's at SoFi Stadium. But I just wonder if San Francisco will be able potentially to pull this out. And what's interesting in the larger picture in the NFC, the Rams right now are the 2 seed, and if they win,
yep,
they will be the 2 seed right behind the Packers. But if the Rams lose, there's suddenly this potential domino ripple effect with regard to how all of the seeding between number 2 and number 5 could shake out amongst the Buccaneers, the Cardinals, who could steal,
yep,
the NFC West if the Rams lose. Obviously, the Cowboys are in that mix as well. If the Rams end up losing the division, if they lose and the Cardinals win, the Rams go from being the 2 all the way to the 5, and suddenly they're going on the road on wildcard,
yes,
weekend. It's a huge shift of fate, so to speak, for them. So Really, that if there's one game in Week 18 that has the biggest implications in the bigger picture, it's this 49ers-Rams game.
Yeah, and I obviously should probably amend my previous statement too and say that, you know, New Orleans has to get past Atlanta for this thing to become all relevant. But you and I were discussing a couple days ago with Atlanta. They are 7-9, but I mean their winning percentage as far as the opponents they face is less than 30%. I mean,
they've had plenty of opportunity to put themselves in a better position. The Falcons just continue to come up short. Yeah. That would be classic Falcons, though, in a way, is if the Rams do beat the 49ers, but then the Falcons would actually stop the Saints from getting in, and then the 49ers would still get in anyway.
And then we're back to the yearly question of, is Matt Ryan still the quarterback
right,
in Atlanta?
Exactly. The whole discussion in Atlanta starts over. Last one before we go. As I mentioned before, the Colts most likely will be getting into the playoffs. They just have to beat the two-win Jacksonville Jaguars in order to do it. And if that happens, then that sets up a Sunday night football winner-go-home game between the Chargers and the Raiders. If the Colts clinch a playoff spot, then between Chargers-Raiders, it's essentially a de facto playoff game. The winner season is still alive. The loser's season is over. So Chargers-Raiders.
I was going to say, are you going to add in the other contingency to that?
Well, Brandon Staley addressed that very directly as far as the – if you don't know what we're talking about, it's as far as the whole idea that if the Colts were to lose to the Jaguars, the Chargers and the Raiders would both get in the playoffs if they tie. So, of course, you could have this conspiratorial, you know, gentleman's agreement to somehow play – 70 minutes of football and have a tie. But Brandon Staley said everyone respects the game. And that's not going to happen because of the respect for the game. So
this is Wes Hockwitz, the anarchist, though.
Yes, I know.
He's not a big fan of
the
Week 18. He's not a big fan of, you know. So there'd be nothing more hilarious than flexing a game into prime time, and then the team goes out there, takes a knee, and the whole thing starts for 70 minutes. Trash is being thrown.
Yeah, that could get a bit.
I'll say this.
It is more than likely, considering the chances, the very strong likelihood that the Colts will beat the Jaguars to get one of those playoff spots, that this will be a win to get in, loser goes home game.
So the Daryl Bevel game out in Jacksonville. Yeah. Win one for the Bevel, you know. No, hey, let me put it this way. Let's boil it down like this. Justin Herbert, I mean, I don't need to say any more about Justin Herbert. Everybody knows how much I love Justin Herbert. The game's on the line. These are the type of games that young man's going to have to win. They may not win a Super Bowl this year, but these are the moments and things you want to see him tested by. The fact they got Austin Ekeler back too, I mean, I think that's really going to help them now after he's done with his bout with COVID. So, yeah, I definitely like the Chargers' chances.
Yeah,
if they don't kneel.
Yeah, I like the Chargers in this one too. If I'm a fan of another team, you know, whose team is in the AFC playoffs, I think I'm kind of rooting for the Raiders, though, just because of the Justin Herbert, like, get hot. Yeah. I know this is a young quarterback who hasn't played in the postseason and has all of this January experience, the big games and everything that he has to learn. But Justin Herbert's one of those quarterbacks who's capable of getting that hot hand. If I'm another team in the AFC, I'd rather see the Raiders in than the Chargers. But that's just my
– I do think
the Chargers will win this game,
though. I love the way the AFC is shaping up, though, for years to come. That is going to be an exciting conference with Burrow, with him. I mean, Tua had some moments this year.
Ton of young, really exciting quarterbacks.
Yeah, but Herbert, man, you want to get the Chargers now, because in 5-6 years, if that kid stays healthy, I think they're going to be a tough out.
Yeah, I think so, too. With that, we'll call it a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of Sunday's game from Ford Field in Detroit. We'll have it all for you on Packers.com. For Wes, I'm Mike. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. See you next time.